This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released December 5th, 2021. Episode 569. Electric Field, son.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Which side of the fence do you sit on? Are you an energy flows outside the wire man or an energy flows inside the wire man? No fence sitting.
No fence sitting. I was going to say, I usually dig under the fence and don't pay attention.
I'm putting him on the spot.
I know you have, and you've been making videos about this. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, does it really matter if I can turn my blender on at the end of the day?
Well, it matters because you're a design engineer and you're
not with that kind of power, man.
Influencer.
Which way does the energy flow? Usually out of the AC to DC adapter in 5
right.
volts. You
know? Okay, right.
It doesn't. Energy doesn't flow in 5 volts, but you know what I mean. Like, most of this stuff, it doesn't concern me, but it was an interesting debate for sure. So people should, maybe you should explain what we're talking about here.
Well, no, it looks like you're on the side of Feynman. So you're safe. You're on the side of Richard Feynman, I suspect, who says, meh, you don't really have to concern yourself with the details.
Yeah, I mean,
usually it's, yeah. Anyway.
It's an abstraction in that it comes out of my wall.
It's an abstraction. Right, because, come on, everyone's heard about it. Veritasium, Derek Muller, did a video on your misconception, the misconception about how energy is transmitted. What's the actual name? The big misconception about electricity. It's basically a big trolling video to us engineers. I know it's informative to Joe Average, Joe Public, but
it's like physicists versus engineers, right?
It's the Electro Boom versus Walter Lewin thing all over again, right?
Yeah.
And Kirchhoff's voltage law thing. But the bottom line is he actually proposed this experiment. Well, no, actually, I'll tell you the thing for those who haven't heard it. He basically is talking about how energy flows outside the wires in the electromagnetic field in the wires. And the actual energy, i.e. power, because energy is power over time. The actual energy does not flow in the copper itself. It flows outside in the electromagnetic fields. And that's backed up by the physics of Maxwell and Poynting as well, about the Poynting vectors. You know, anyone who's studied engineering has, you know, no doubt been slapped over the head with this kind of stuff. And the bottom line is he's not wrong, right? From a physics standpoint, this seems to be the correct interpretation of how energy actually flows. We're not talking about electron drift and all that sort of stuff, right? We're talking about the actual flow of energy. Where does it flow? Yeah. Inside the wire or outside? And Maxwell and Poynting theorems say it's outside.
Right. And I guess to make a very simple case of all this stuff, not a simple case of this stuff rather, but like in a similar scenario, like, you know, people always say like, oh, current is opposite to electron flow. And I'm like, well, I don't care. Does it help me get my job done faster?
Exactly.
You know, like, can I calculate the current leaking into the input of a high impedance op amp input? It's like, if I can do that, that's all I really care about. You know,
right.
Like, let me measure the physical phenomenon. Now, yeah, there's math behind it for sure. And it's, you know, so in the case of current, it's different. It's opposite of electron flow the same way. But okay, so the example he's giving, though, one of the examples
The example, you've got wires half a light second in each direction. So 300,000 kilometers in each direction. You've got a simple circuit, like a battery and a light bulb and a switch, right?
Yes.
But it goes, but the loops go half a light second in each direction, right?
Yeah.
So in theory, it should take like a second for this light bulb to light up.
If you were a photon traveling along the outside of that wire, it would take you 1 second to go out and back, right?
But of course it doesn't. The answer is it lights up and they're only a meter apart. So the answer is And he was tricky with the answer too. And I think it was deliberate. And the answer is it happens in 1 meter on C seconds because it jumps across the 1 meter gap. It jumped and it can jump across the 1 meter gap in three ways, because when you flick that switch, you're going into a transient mode. So you have to do transient mode analysis, as us engineers call it, as these physicists don't know about this sort of stuff. You know, this is the domain of engineering. You have to do transient mode analysis. When you do transient mode analysis, it acts, these wires act as transmission lines, and they've got inductance, they've got capacitance, and they've got resistance, right? But he assumes that there's zero resistance. So you take that out. But even then, yeah, the fact that you've got capacitance between these wires, no matter how small, it will jump across, right? The electric field will jump across, and it jumps across in the time it takes to traverse that 1 meter gap. And then, but you can look at this three ways. You can actually analyze this three ways. I analyzed it using like the cable capacitance method, because I've done a couple of videos on this. One's on my second channel. I'm talking about the simulation side of it. So I did, because I think that's the easiest explanation. There's capacitance between these two wires, and everyone knows that as soon as you flick on a switch, a capacitor is a short circuit, right? That's how us engineers analyze this for practical purposes.
Yeah, so we dumb it down for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. So it jumps across to the light bulb, in quote marks, the ideal light bulb that lights up instantly with one electron, you know, right? So it jumps across that 1 meter. So it doesn't, so when you flick on the switch, the energy does not have to flow all the way out 300,000 kilometers and along the wires and back. It can jump over the gap. And there's three ways it can do it. One is the capacitance. The other, you can model this as a transformer, right? Because you've got a wire, you know, you've got two wires, right? With a current flowing. And right,
it's a heck of an air gap you have there.
It's a heck of a, it's a pretty piss poor transformer. Let's put it that way. And the other one is you can model it. It's a dipole antenna. Right. So you got the photons jumping off the antenna and blah, 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 blah. Right. So there's several different ways from an engineering perspective you can analyze this. But physicists, it's all the pointing vectors and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, it's a trick trolling question and he knows it. But he's not wrong in the answer, technically, I don't think. Yeah. Anyway, so what was it? Have you actually watched the video? What was your
I watched the video. Opinion? I knew it was going to make people upset and I moved on.
And you moved on, didn't get involved. Yeah.
Well, you know, I had work to do, so.
Right, okay, yeah.
You know what I would do is if I had someone who wired up that circuit, I'd have two things. One, I'd say, you just wasted a whole shitload of wire.
Yeah,
and two,
yeah.
That's I would flip the switch and then I'd, you know, measure it, I guess. You know, get a high-speed camera or yeah. I don't know.
He really. Actually said that if anyone questions him, maybe he could set up like a big experiment in a desert or something like that. It's like, good luck with that. Yeah, a meter gap, you know, you would have to go down, you know, like, it's going to be pretty hard at a meter, I think, to see any real effect on this.
It definitely makes people think it you know, showcases
how many, there's so many spin-off videos. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So many people are talking
conversation.
About
Yeah, as a science communicator, if nothing else, he has succeeded.
He won. Yeah. He won spectacularly. I think it's got 7 million views and it spawned like 50 different response videos from every engineering YouTuber and science YouTuber on the planet, you know. So, yep, guilty as charged. Because so many people asked for it. Like, I couldn't not do it. I mean, it was, you know, I was being swamped with emails and messages of, Dave, have you seen this? Can you comment? Can you comment?
Right. Well, and, you're saying the same thing, you know. I said I had work to do, and then you said you also had work to do, and that's just that's the work you do now, Dave.
Well, on my second channel, I snipped this out of my live show from a couple of weeks ago. I had not seen his video, I had not heard about it, and somebody mentioned it in my live show chat. So I show my reaction to just like hearing about it, and the instant I heard about it, my mind like I didn't even know the title of it. I didn't even know what it was about, but the way people were explaining it, like, you know, explained it to me, my mind instantly jumped to, I think he's talking about energy in the fields. And yeah, this is a real thing, because it is a real thing when you start talking transmission lines, right? When you start talking high speed PCB transmission lines, like the energy flows in the dielectric. It's a big, you know, it's like a real thing that you have to take into account. This isn't just obscure physics crap, right?
Sure.
It's
sure.
You know, it's you really do have to care about this sort of stuff once you get into the high end in engineering side of things. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that happens is like it gets abstracted away, especially for people like, you know, we have these mental models we have to go and amend over time, right? And one of my concerns is always like, is if you lay that on someone and you say to them like, well, energy travels in the fields and that means it's actually going through the dielectric, and it's like so hard to comprehend at the beginning that they just throw their hands up and leave.
Exactly.
It's like,
yep.
Maybe we visualize this as a wire on the top of a surface and it's going real slow and it's like, you know, it's like a wavy thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, I don't know. There is that aspect as well. And I think a lot of people who are into the pure physics and the math of it, they're like, well, you just got to work through it. And it's like,
okay,
that's great. But we're trying to keep more people. We're trying to keep people here, you know? I'm like, I don't know.
This is where the rubber hits the road with engineering, with practical engineering, right? At the end of the day, engineering is a practical science, right? This is why we've developed the tools and the methods. Like we don't use what engineer uses freaking Maxwell's equations and pointing vectors? Nobody, right? This is why Ohm's law was developed, the power transfer theorem and Kirchhoff's voltage and current laws and all the other tools we use in our tool set.
It's all just dressing up Maxwell over and over again, right?
You can go back to the fundamental physics, but there's, for most practical purposes in engineering, there's just no point, you know? Even the famous Richard Feynman says this, right? Mm-hmm. Richard Feynman, mm-hmm. in his famous lecture notes, which I put in my video, he says, yeah, well, this seems to be true about when he's talking about the pointing vectors and energy flowing outside the wire and stuff. He goes, you know, you can be forgiven for not caring, basically.
Dick said it's cool. It's cool with me.
Yep. Paraphrase Feynman. Yep. So I think that's, if it's good enough for Feynman, it's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Yep. Totally agree. I don't like to, you know, name drop and, you know, by authority, you know, I don't want to do by authority, but, you know, Richard Feynman's held in pretty high esteem, right? Oh, boy. Anyway, what a troll. Speaking of which, you put in here a video which I have not watched yet, but I will watch this at lunchtime today while I'm eating my sandwich. I will watch how electricity gets to you.
This is great.
You've obviously watched it. I have not. So it's,
you know, my lunchtime time is before your lunchtime and your lunchtime is before my next lunchtime. Yeah, no, this is a great one. This is from, I'm loading it up and forgetting my
Wendover names. Productions.
Wendover, yeah.
Wendover's Productions.
Amazing.
I do like his videos.
But they show all of the different, you know, energy sources. So like the steady nuclear, coal, that sort of thing. And then like peak power and stuff like that.
There is no physics in this, right? I sort of briefly just skipped through and I don't think this is a...
No, I don't think so. No, this is more about practical, like
this
how
is
power
practical.
Is delivered.
How does it...
Right, showing all the different step-down voltages at various levels and transfer. And then like energy storage. One thing that he didn't bring up in there, which I'm kind of that I was thinking about as I was watching this thing, is like, so he talks about like, so he's focusing on Colorado, and basically they have, when they have excess generation, they do that thing where they pump water up a hill upper reservoir, and then they pull it back down as they need it throughout the day, which is fantastic, as assuming you can, you know, hold
if
on to
you
the
have
water,
the
doesn't evaporate.
Geology to do it, yeah,
that's right, yep,
geography to do it,
yeah. And Colorado most definitely has elevation.
Exactly.
But I was thinking about another version of that, which I'm not a huge fan of overall, but it could work, where you could basically, you could do like compute cycles, right? You could do like low, you could like batch all of your compute as
Bitcoin
a
mining.
Example.
Just Bitcoin put all your mining. Bitcoin mining.
That's right.
Yeah, your excess power.
Well, and you could do it just at night. Stuff, I mean, when it's cheap, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then that would help level out loads and stuff like that. And and then, you know, as need really gets there, we could completely discontinue Bitcoin and all crypto and go back to the old ways. But I think I'm going to lose that battle.
Not going to happen, dude. Yep,
I know. That cat's never going back in that bag. but yeah, just that kind of idea of like compute, like as a consumer, instead of like storage of energy, basically you just have variable consumer levels. But maybe that's a bad idea too.
Well, they're doing that with...
waste a lot of energy.
Electric cars, they're actually doing that. Yep. They're like, I actually signed up for a trial to get a one of these smart fast charger things where, you know, the government's doing this experiment where, to actually time and stagger. So the idea is you come home at night and you plug in your EV, right? Uh-huh. And then it's centrally controlled so that it'll charge you, so that everyone doesn't charge their car at once and the grid falls over, right?
Just goes, that's right, yeah. And that is one of the points that Wendover's making as well, is that, like, you know, all power, when you flip a switch, it's being requested from an actual, like, it's, you know, it's drawing it off the grid, but it's like, it's being generated somewhere at the exact same time to backfill that energy in the fields.
Did he go into power factor at all? Did he mention that? I thought that would be a bit too much for these sort of.
Yeah, this is a higher level type thing. Yep. So this is more about, like, sources and, you know, and then, like, various types of energy and pollution levels and stuff like that too. So,
it's absolutely fascinating. For those who don't know, the world's largest structure is our grid. Massive orders of magnitude. Yeah. It's such a massive infrastructure. People just take for granted. It just works. You know, you turn on your switch and your power's there. But
as both a homeowner and a recent parent, I can tell people definitively, turn off the lights when you leave the goddamn room.
Yep.
Were you born in a barn? Do they have that phrase? Do they say it in Australia?
Tent.
Oh, really? Oh, yes. Interesting.
You're born in a tent. I say it to Mrs. EEV blog all the time. You know, born in a tent. Funny. You know, you're born in a tent. Yeah. You know, leaving the doors open. You know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, here it's barn. Okay. Born in a barn.
Born in a barn. Yep.
Culture, learning. Yep. No, it's a great. That's a interesting thing about that stuff. I'm not sure there's much else to learn from that. Okay. Wendover is a fantastic
absolutely
channel.
It's a great channel, and it's an absolutely fascinating topic. If you just go searching for, like, I think we've mentioned on here before, tours. Like, there's videos of power substations. They're just absolutely fascinating.
That's right. You know. Yeah, that switch. Yeah. One of the things they mentioned in the video is high voltage DC and how that's apparently there's a link from Portland down to LA, and so, like, hydro in Portland will power LA. Air conditioners in the summer, and they said the other direction for heaters.
Okay.
So I was actually thinking about this in context of, like, so if you're doing high voltage DC, does that mean you actually are pushing the electrons then, or is it like electrons pushing out their electrons? You know what I mean?
That's the argument when you reach DC steady state. See? And you remember how I was talking about transient analysis before? Sooner or later, a couple of seconds later, you reach DC steady state and then all bets are off. But according to Feynman, both Feynman and Poynting and Maxwell, it still flows outside the wire. But, if you didn't think there was a reason to worry about it before, there's even less reason to worry about it during DC steady state. In my humble opinion. So the arguments sort of start going away in DC steady state. But technically,
At these high voltage DC levels, right? So I think I've seen, like, up to a million volts DC.
Yes, on these overseas transmission lines, yeah.
Because I used to catch this stuff from, like, when I was working at ABB, they would be talking about this stuff all the time. Mm. And I honestly just don't understand it. This is a video for you to make. I don't understand how the hell that works.
Dude, I've made a video for everything. Hang on. EV Blog 2, DC transmission. The world's largest solar. Here it is.
Doesn't stop talking, folks. He just talks about everything.
I don't stop talking. There it is. Second channel video a couple of years ago. I did a run in the numbers on a high voltage DC transmission line, which is going from Australia to, I think, Singapore, was it? Something like that. Anyway.
Oh.
Yeah. Because we were going to put this huge solar farm here in Australia because, you know, it's the outback and we have lots of sun and lots of room. So we're going to install this huge solar array and then we're going to export the energy overseas. And it's 3,800 kilometers away. So we're going to export it 3,800 kilometers. Yes, to Singapore. Yes, we're going to transport it to Singapore. So this a solar array in Australia was going to power Singapore. I don't know how much, but it was a good percentage of Singapore's power, like half their power or something.
Mm.
Yeah, and I just ran the numbers on that, and it's absolutely fascinating. So go on, watch
it. Was it at a million? I mean, like...
I can't remember. Was it at a million volts? I can't remember. I think it's pretty close. It's. I do know it's 2,420 amps by my notes here. No, 500 kV, I was assuming. 500 kV. Oh, okay.
Because I know that some of them have been moving up to a million volts.
Up to a million. I realize. So
but that's still 1,200 amps then. That's pretty beefy. I mean,
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's not small. It's not small cabling.
No, it's a big deal. But yeah, apparently I think I ended up calculating like a 10% loss or something, which, you know, is significant, but it's not a showstopper, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Yeah.
Well, and having stepped down transformers in the middle of the ocean would probably also be problematic.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Anyway, yeah, cool. And for those, I get, you know, these questions all the time, as you might as well, being an engineering educator.
Not me. No.
I'm sure you have. You know, engineering students are going, oh, what field should I get into? What speciality should I get into?
Electric fields, son. Electric fields.
Oh. I'll pay that. And, oh, boy. And electric fields outside of your industry.
That's right, 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 right.
Anyway, yeah, no, power. Power is if you want the filthy lucre, you know, if you want the if you want the filthy bucks,
big dollary dues,
the big kahunas, get into power transmission and stuff like that. Yeah, I think you'll find. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, exciting people, when you see your coworker fried on spit. But,
thanks for that.
Not the good kind of exciting, image, you know.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, there's like, and that can be fascinating to a lot of people. So it, I'm not saying go into it because of the money. You should definitely go into whatever you find the most.
Yeah, go into what you're interested in, and there will also be money.
If that's the case, if you find power transmission interesting, go watch a bunch of YouTube videos on it, and you'll find that. Oh, yeah, that's fascinating. I'd love to work in that, and there's big bucks in it, and there's lots of jobs. So, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
What's Andy's channel? I forget the Zappy Zappy.
Andy
the Brit. Yeah.
Come on. Until I get it.
Photonic induction.
Photonic induction. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Watch that.
Thank you. Oh, boy. Yeah. Watch photonic induction. Good fun. He enjoys his craft.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a man who enjoys his hobby. and that's his line of work, too. It's not just his hobby. He's in that sort of stuff. Maybe we can get him on the show sometime. He can talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But anyway, power transmission and YouTube arguments. I just got into another YouTube argument. It's YouTube drama all the way this week.
Not for me, but go ahead.
No, it's the
EV. No, I know what you're talking about. I think actually I am on your side on this one.
Oh, excellent. It's the electric buses. Adam something, another YouTube channel. I think he's got like 500,000-600,000 subscribers or something. And he said electric buses are basically a scam. They're not practical and they won't happen. And, well, no, he's completely wrong. And I did a 30-minute response video saying why he's wrong. And, it's happening. Yep. There's some people in the comments who have said, like, because I use that in the video, not as an argument, but a lot of people took it as an argument. And I said, well, it's happening whether you like it or not, right? And no, that wasn't meant to be an argument because I go into a whole ton of arguments, right? That was just meant to be something that he didn't admit to no, it's not practical. They're only making a couple of these and it's just, it's a scam. It's just a PR gimmick, you know, and the usual stuff like that. And no, it's not. It's like, countries, entire cities, even Sydney here, we're going 100% fully electric bus fleet. And this is not pie in the sky. They just ordered put another 40 on the roads last month, I think, and they're going to 100% fleet. And they're not doing it for no reason. There's very good reasons that they're doing it, very good economic reasons, which he said, no, it doesn't. It's more cost effective to stick with diesel or go to trolley buses, which is the overhead wire thing.
Yeah, I thought the diesel thing is way off. I think the wires, I mean, it's basically the same thing. It's basically AC versus DC at that point, right? I mean, it's you got AC wires up above and you're doing that. But then infrastructure cost-wise, I mean, I wouldn't know what the difference.
Oh, it's huge. I've got numbers in the video. I found some just maintenance numbers. This didn't include. This is just to maintain the overhead wire grid. It was like almost. It was like 15 times. It was almost two orders of magnitude more. than just electric buses, because there's zero maintenance costs because it's the existing roads, right? There's just nothing, right? Which have to be, the existing roads have to be maintained anyway.
Right. You centralize all your infrastructure at the charging stations then, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. So no, he's wrong. So I'm sure he'll do a response video picking apart my video, and it's like, maybe I'll do another response video and we'll do some ping pong maybe, but that ain't a thing.
Yep.
Can we follow the YouTube theme this episode? Because it's, I don't know if you've seen it, and I put it in here somewhere. Insane changes at Linus Tech. Nobody thumbs it up. Nobody wants me to talk about it. I want to talk about it because I think it's interesting. Insane changes at Linus Tech.
What do you think is interesting about it? Linus Tech Tips is a long time YouTube channel. He does a lot of tech reviews and stuff like that.
It's all PC tech review stuff, right? It's basically almost all PCs, isn't it? I think it's almost all PC related.
I think phones as well.
Oh, phones as well. Okay, right. Yeah, I don't watch it. You know, I'm not really a regular viewer. Just if, you know, something interesting pops up and people point me to it, I'll watch it. And yeah, I thought that they had already expanded to insane levels, but I was wrong. And they're only just getting started, right? Because he's got like 20, 30 employees or something. And he's got like 4 editors, and they shoot with like high-end 8K, you know, $100,000 RED cameras. At, you know, like, it's just like, and they've built all their servers. They've got their float plane system to host their own content. And, you know, it's like, it's just crazy level for just what they're, you know, for the kind of stuff they're doing. But if that's what they want to do, and they're making money from it, they're employing people and they're making a profit, great, you know, fantastic. But what he's doing now is he's, I think, bought a gigantic new place. I assume he's bought it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This gigantic new place. And what he's saying is basically what it's going to be is a state-of-the-art lab, a state-of-the-art test lab. And they, and he's going to hire not just tech people, he's hiring real engineers, like, you know, top-grade engineers to actually, they're going to install all sorts of test gear from RF anechoic chambers to acoustic chambers to, you know, a power supply, you know, full-on testing and, you know, almost anything you can think of, right? He wants to install not only the testing infrastructure to do it at any cost. Basically, he showed a blank check on their thing, right? I've got this blank check, and if you think I can't afford you, try me. Is his own words. He's talking to engineers here, right? He's talking, if you're like the best engineer out there at testing power supplies, I want you, right? And I'll pay anything to get you. And it's just I don't know what to think. It's just, on one hand, I'm blown away. On the other hand, I go, well, what is kind of the point of all, like, it's just PC review stuff, yet they go into such intricate detail on everything. But I guess that's the audience, right? The audience who buy their $2,000 video card care about, oh, this thing does it 2 cycles quicker than this one, so I'm going to pay an extra $2,000 for that. You know, it's like, that's the kind of audience. They're so caught up in the absolute minute details. If you think engineers care about power supplies, right? No, go over to the PC world, go online, you know, and they're arguing over the, you know, the brands of the capacitors and the type of layout and the power transistors used in their PC power supplies, right? They're like that insane level. These, you know, gamer PC people, they're just wow, they're a new level of extreme.
Yeah, but I always kind of felt that was more like the audio file community more than I didn't feel like there was actually any real analysis behind it so much as like specsmanship behind it, you know.
Well, that's what he wants to do. He wants to quantify it all. He wants to he just doesn't want to do hand wavy testing. He wants to actually quantify that, yes, this SATA cable is better than this one because of the signal integrity. Look, I can push it to 10 gig or something as opposed to 8 on this one, and check out the eye diagram on this sucker, right? He wants to quantify all this stuff. And that's the interesting part of how he's expanding here. It's a big quantification lab. Is that a word? Quantification lab?
I don't know.
It's a big lab where they measure shit, basically, right? And like do it, like and automate all the testing so that they can test, like, you know, 20 different power supplies and like and automate the entire testing and everything. It's phenomenal what he wants to do. It's just it's crazy level, but in a good way.
Yeah, I don't know how he's gonna pay for it, you know.
Well, sponsorship and merch.
Yeah,
he says merch is a big part of it, and he's expanding the merch part department. He's like hiring like 50 to 100 people or something. I don't know, the list is huge of people sure. that he wants to hire for just this testing lab. It's just crazy. So yeah, well, hats off to him because that's just nuts. And this spurred me to think about, and I posted this on my YouTube community channel. Yeah, laugh away. Anyway.
I'm just imagining you being like, I'm going to hire someone again.
I'll hire one person. Yeah. Thought did cross my mind. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a second. I've got my new 30 square meter dungeon downstairs, right? Whopping 30 square meters. So I thought, what sort of cool big test gear can I put in there that would make for cool videos? Not something that sucks my life away like a pick and place machine, please, please. But no, I'm talking like a real proper big thermal chamber, like a big vibration test rig, which is actually today's video. We can talk about that. I'm about to edit it after this. Did some vibration testing, which was cool. And, you know, a vibration test cable, maybe an acoustic test chamber to measure fan noise, right? Like, you know, maybe a little mini far field RFI testing thing, you know.
Sure. That'd be good.
Stuff like this. If anyone's got any ideas of, you know, what stuff I
think one thing that happens with a lot of the testing stuff is like, you know, there's a lot of expertise at the testing houses, obviously. And there's a lot of expertise in longtime engineers who have had to go through it a bunch.
Yep.
But then like there's maybe some consulting people that are willing to offer you training, that sort of stuff. But it's just like, it's such niche knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
It's not like there's not a ton of stuff out there like, here's how you always pass your EMI test and stuff like that.
It's more like,
sign up for my training and I'll teach you how to customize your design to,
yep.
you know, that sort of thing. It's like, okay. I mean, it's valuable. It's worth it to do that sort of thing. But it's not normally on YouTube, as far as I could tell.
There's not much out there. There is some, but yeah. I've done some videos on it. I've done some videos on conducted mode emissions and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in a lab, was it?
No. It's not. It's not. This is a real calibrated measurement that's going to match one that's going to be in an EMC.
Yeah.
Lab,
I mean, I want to see a reading. You didn't have Reading Rainbow there, I'm sure, but you know, like a Reading Rainbow episode where they go to a testing lab. And they do a test.
Right.
That's what I want.
Yep.
I want LeVar Burton to be there.
I have visited a RFA lab. I have done a video visiting test lab, but it was basically a tour. It wasn't, we're going to test something. Here's all the steps in testing this product in this lab, you know. That's so,
Yeah, I want to basically follow along as an engineering team goes through it, you know.
Yep.
I want the mockumentary of the test lab.
So it also did get me thinking, as you mentioned, like hire someone. It did get me thinking again. Not that, you know, this sort of stuff always gets me thinking.
You do not want to do that
anyway,
again.
No, I'm just wondering if there is a market out there for this Linus Tech Tips sort of idea, but in the test equipment space. Like would people actually want to see like a proper lab setup and somebody whose job is to thoroughly evaluate and test all the new test gear that comes on the market?
Maybe. I think one of the things that always comes back to for me is like, you need to first define all of the product categories.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. It's
having
insane.
Worked at a test equipment company, let me tell
you. Yeah, right.
There's nothing that a product marketer loves more at a test equipment company than making their own category for a thing so that nothing compares to it. And it's like, okay, so then the job of an external group is to be like, all right, well, how do we compare these things? And, oh, well, this one spec'd it like this, and this one spec'd it like that. And you know, the chip companies do it too. And it's just like, well, can we just agree on a single standard? And the answer is no, they never, ever will.
No, of course not. No.
At least on the chip side, it'll all be taken care of when it's just down to a single chip company.
Yeah. Right, as it inevitably will be.
Oh, yeah, we're down that path. We're on that path. Yeah.
But yeah, is there, I don't know, please leave it in the comments down below if you think there's a market out there. Obviously, like, this is not something, if you wanted to take it seriously, like, you have to have a full-time person, you've got to have a full-time lab, you know, you can't just dick around. And you would have to get sponsors to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, like, and I'm like, how do you make it interesting too, right? I mean, like, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how Linus and crew make that stuff interesting in the first place, but like, you know, when there's always some subjective nature to, like, when I think about, like, a lot of the tech reviews that's out there, usually there's personalities and there's like, you know, they're like, oh, well, this one feels like this and this one's like...
Yeah, it's also in the editing as well. This is why they have half a dozen video editors, because it's to make the polished content, you know, is to get it down to, like, exactly what they need.
So if you really wanted to do it right with doing, like, comparing, say, like, five different mid-tier scopes,
right?
You do similar kind of testing that you would, like, anyone who's doing a evaluation when they get a bunch of budget at the beginning of the year, right? So people are probably coming up on this in corporations right now. And it's like, okay, you want to see, like, comparisons of five different scopes with the exact same test. That's great. You want to see that data, but boy, that'd be boring to run and to work, to watch, you know? It's just
That's why you have to edit it down to a 15-minute video, right? It's got to be like a 15-minute summary, right? It's got to be edited down.
Not even that. I mean, I just mean if all you're doing is comparing five things, it's like, ooh, look, this one is 4% better.
Well, if that turns out to be the case, but then you can, of course, the interesting stuff comes in the problems that you have, right? Some of my most popular videos have been, oh, this scope is shit because, look, well, it's not shit, but check out this bug I found. Like, this is shocking. Sure. You know, this is like, you know, it's nuts.
Right. But what happens when you stop finding that, right?
And you stop finding that and they're all very similar. And
these,
it's like,
five scopes are pretty good.
I know.
8.8. All of them out of 10. 8.8.
Well, judging by the popularity of test equipment on the EEV blog forum, I'd say there's a big market out there of people arguing over this shit, right?
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah. That's because people,
know,
like,
whether
arguing
or not it translates into views and can translate into, I don't know, people, somehow you've got to pay for it all. Right. Yeah. It's like, it's not something that I can do on my own. Right.
No,
it's just not, you've got to have,
it's not a YouTube channel. It's a expert. It's a consumer report service, right? Where you have,
it's a consumer report service, or it's like,
you know what you should do. You should start an award ceremony. Here's what you should do. You should, you should start an award ceremony and have a big to do every year.
Yep.
Best new scope.
Best new scope. Yep.
Most improved scope firmware
award, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh boy, I don't know.
Terrible industry to be in.
Well, I do have, you know, a couple of products, couple of name brands over the years have won the EEV blog retarded product of the year award. Right. So
I don't use that word, Dave. Okay.
Come on. You know.
Yeah. So I could see going the other direction, the Darwin Awards of products, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but that's, you know, but then it's got to blow up.
That's true. That's true. Would have
you
to
know,
blow up.
It's got to, you know, which has happened, but, you know,
sure,
it's not. You can't make a channel over.
Most of those don't get to market. Yeah, or they shouldn't be getting to market.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, these are the things that happen, is, you know, like, we all go through our careers, things change, things get normalized over time. I'm trying to work my way towards hardware engineering at 40 plus. This is what I'm trying to work towards in a segue.
Right. Okay.
It didn't really work. But Dave,
not
you're
on
over
list.
40.
Well, so the rumor goes, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm getting pretty close myself here. This was actually a post that was on Hacker News, which is a lot of software people, right? A lot of startup-y software people, and reading some of that stuff is insane to me.
Is this on the list?
It is on the list.
Oh, hardware engineering 40 plus. Yes, I missed it.
Yeah. So there's an associated Hacker News article, just basically about, like, as you move up in the software world, right? You don't necessarily lose your edge, but there's definitely some ageism in there, and there's also, like, you know, you might not be attuned to the newest hottest software. You might be, you know, in a niche or something like that. And so they're talking about, like, well, yeah, you want to be a software engineer 40 plus, you better have tempered expectations. And so what I was wondering is, like, that doesn't really exist in hard. I mean, like, not that there's not ageism in the electronics industry. There totally is, I'm sure, as well. But, like, just how that maps to hardware engineering as well. Like, is it possible to be the grizzled old graybeard? And do they get kind of stuck in the corner, or can they still have, like, a...
Are they talking about, like, changing, like, like changing, not changing careers, but changing focus in their career? What are they, or are they talking about just actually getting a job?
They're talking about, I think, moving up in a job, really. So like they're already, they're already 40 plus. Maybe they want to move laterally. So like in this case, again, they're talking big, you know, Fang type companies, manga type companies, whatever you're calling
Fang type
Apples.
What?
Oh, so Fang traditionally was Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google.
Oh, right.
And now joke is that it became either Ma, if Google becomes Alphabet, and Facebook becomes Meta,
or Manga. Please. Please. No.
If you just changed Facebook, yeah, it's stupid.
No.
But anyways, it's these very, very high-paid software engineering roles. That's what it really comes down to at these monolith software companies. So... yeah, I mean, it's just interesting kind of comparing, because it doesn't, from my perspective, like I've worked with many older hardware engineers who they're actually lauded for having that much experience. You know, it's like you
you've
seen a lot of it. Maybe, you know, maybe you're grumpy and you're not going to be designing the next, you know, Wi-Fi 6 widget or something like that. Or you might not be doing like the 24 board layer board design or something if there's, or maybe you are, I don't know. Like, you know, like just kind of where experience in the electronics industry helps or hurts. It seems like in the software industry, it hurts sometimes, which interesting to me.
Like if you want to do something like, you know, all the interesting things that happen in startups, right? For example, well, that's the promise, right?
Is the software world or the hardware world or both?
Oh, both. You can say both, right? So would, is it common? I don't know enough about the startup world. Is it common to get the old graybeards into a startup company? It doesn't seem to be the case. Like you might get them on the board or something like that. You know, they might get on the advisory board or something, but I don't see I can't say I've noticed startups like hiring. Oh yeah, we've hired this graybeard engineer. You know, it's like they're usually like, you know, oh, we've hired a young PhD, you know, we've hired these young PhDs or whatever. And they don't seem to be, I don't know.
I don't think I agree with you on the hardware startups are doing the most interesting things. I actually think it's like the most interesting problems I've seen are like at the Northrop Grumman's of the world, right?
They're like these
defense contractors and they have like super, super specialized roles for hardware, and they're just doing things that nobody else is asking for, where there's the market is like the US government and then the British government. And that's like it, you know?
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's probably not going to work if you're trying to sell into like consumer level markets or even industrial level markets. So I think that might be part of why you don't see as many older engineers in startups. I think there's also a risk tolerance type thing. Like you might not want to take the risk of, you know, delaying some of your compensation towards stock that's worth something in 10 or 20 years. Right. So, and if it's another bet, right. So if you do that when you're 25 or 30, it's like, okay, that the first startup didn't work out. The second one did. And then you've made a small payday. It's like, okay, no big deal. Or maybe you do three in a row and it's still not that big a deal, because then you're 40 and then you go work at a corporate job or something like that. And you have this interesting experience in your resume.
Well, the poster on Hacker News, Man Next Door, it basically seems to be talking about sort of like you sort of end up in a limbo land where you don't have enough experience to be a staff engineer or a principal engineer or whatever the buzzword is these days, right? Because he's saying that, you know, like only the top three, he uses the example, only the top 3-4% of engineers in the industry have that sort of level. Yet you're more experienced, way more experienced than just all the regular, you know, average engineer.
You might get someone who's a senior engineer who's like got 5 or 7 years of experience, and then the next step up for them at 10 years of experience is that same level as you at 30 years of experience.
It makes sense. Yeah, I think I've said this in my videos. Once you get like 5+ years experience on your resume, it's like, yeah, you're in, right? You're an experienced engineer, and you're pretty much the same. It probably makes no difference between 5 years and 15 or 20 years experience, really.
Right. I think some of it depends, how well you're known, what you're known for, what you can deliver. And you've crossed that threshold.
Once again, I think it comes back to your previous work experience. Like, do you have a work experience in that field? If you do, you're in.
Yeah.
If you don't, it's like, well, you can come on as a Joe Average engineer, but, you know,
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the other thing that happens too is that some of it is structural in the industry, right? So like a lot of people around that age, they start moving up. They're like, okay, I want to move up the company. And, you know, a lot of companies do have dual track. They have independent contributor or technical track, and then they have a management track.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen that promoted by other people as well, where, you know, like, I think the top tier that I saw was like chief architect scientist or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, basically that is the top of the technical track. But from my perspective, that's still like, you're not really running things. You know, there's always like command and control aspect of it all. And it's like, the management track is still making decisions.
Yeah. Well, I've worked at companies where people have gotten into management engineering roles that suck at management. Like, they can't do management. They have no experience in it, yet they got there simply because they've been there the longest, you know?
Totally.
And Yep.
Right. And one, you know, I've talked to people. So like, obviously in the consulting world, I think consulting is a workaround in all this, right? Both in hardware and software, that you can take your expertise, you can kind of sell that expertise at a premium and say, I'm short run, you're not hiring me for forever, but you can use my expertise. You can rent my expertise instead of buying it, that sort of idea.
Yep.
And I've met people that have actually come back into technical consulting from managerial space. And it's just like, yeah, they're like, I don't want to do that anymore. And that's kind of that's the way to pull the lever. I mean, I was kind of on that path as well, right? I was in product marketing,
right?
And I was moving towards like more of that. And I was like, no, I want to do technical stuff. So,
right. Yeah. I've been in a group, like a hardware group. I was just, you know, engineering the hardware group. And the position was open for the head of the hardware group, right? And it actually went to another engineer over yet another engineer who had a master's degree and had a lot of experience managing groups, right? These were new employees who came in. We were all fairly new. But the person who got the role was not the master's degree experienced in managing hardware teams, wears a tie every day guy. He didn't get it. It was the barefoot, you know, T-shirt hardware engineer.
The hippie engineer. Huh?
It was the hippie engineer who... being a bit melodramatic, but you know, it was like the one who had no engineering, who had no management experience at all, but because that person was the most liked engineer out of a lot,
like a team leader style kind of thing. Like,
well, no, it wasn't even
lead.
The person much higher up in the company liked this guy more than he liked the guy who should have got the job, who actually had real team, you know, technical engineering team management experience at multiple companies, and he didn't get the role. He was effectively demoted to just regular engineer. And so it's not who you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, I guess, or who likes you. So
yeah, it's who knows you, Dave. That's the way that phrase goes.
I thought that was, you know, and he left soon after because he realized is just dumb, you know, like, come on, I'm, you know, this guy has no management experience whatsoever.
Was there an age aspect of that or no?
Oh, no,
or was it just
no, similar age. No, it certainly wasn't an age thing. It was just this person was liked more. So they got the role even when they probably shouldn't have, you know? So
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose this is as good a time as any. I should probably announce that I actually, speaking of startups and speaking of non-management roles, I recently joined a startup.
I didn't know you were going to announce this.
I am going to announce this. Yeah.
You are now a full-time employee.
Yes.
Yes.
This is actually a former guest of the show, Jonathan Berry. We talked about why IoT sucks. And actually, he didn't want me to name it that at the time. That's what I said, why IoT sucks. And I think we named it Why IoT is Hard. And this is back in January, I think, of 2021. We talked. And then back around April, I started talking to him. When I went on paternity leave, I started talking to him about consulting and then, you know, just enjoy the team, enjoy the space. And I enjoyed torturing Dave talking about IoT.
Yep.
And so that's fun. And so I'll be doing hardware. I'm much like Dave said, I'm the only hardware person at this startup.
Which is small, right? It's like sub 10 people or something.
10
like
people.
10.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's an IoT platform. I posted about it in the channel. And I'm really excited about it. It basically enables hardware, I always say hardware weenies. I probably shouldn't say that often, but I always say hardware weenies like
weenies.
Me to actually connect things to the internet, which is completely impossible, right?
Yeah, to me, from a software point, like, you know, I can program, but I can't, once it involves web and the internet and everything, or no, I'm out of it. Yeah. You know, I'm just like, no. Throw my hands up, no.
Yeah. And so this actually, it's built with Zephyr, which is the open source RTOS that I mentioned in the past.
Yep.
And that 100% has learning curve. I'm trying to make videos about it and like make that easier to learn. But once you learn that and you tie this stuff in, it actually like, it's, for example, like the ABC board, which I've talked about on here, and I made that for my course. I just kind of figured I was going to figure that stuff out later, right? I hired Bilal, who I've talked about on the show before. He's the one who was a Zephyr developer. And even like Bilal didn't know how to like, he knew how to like throw packets at an MQTT endpoint, but like, okay, then what?
Well,
and like, how was I going to figure out how to do like firmware updates and like hook into databases and do all that other stuff? And so this is all that other stuff basically kind of taken care of. And even some of the stuff that Bilal was doing, well, assuming someone like Bilal has already written a driver for it. Right. So if you like choose a board that already has all the drivers, basically I stood up a demo for a, you know, flip a solenoid, turn on LEDs, measure whether or not a door was open, and do all that over cellular and have firmware updating, and then be able to like change all this stuff over cellular to the network, to a web endpoint.
Right.
And basically like from a web page, I could like do all that stuff I was talking about, measure and interact with stuff.
Yep.
And doing all that took me 3 hours.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah. So
yep,
I'm excited about it.
Excellent.
Hardware weenies like me may enjoy it.
Does that mean that you're out of the consulting business? No one should contact you
anymore?
I'm
doing a little consulting, actually. So
doing some, but not, you're not accepting new work, are you? You
that's right.
Don't have the time.
Yeah. So don't call me about new stuff, but I have lots of friends on the consulting forum I can refer you to. So
cool. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But building lots of hardware and it's really exciting.
Well, I hope that works. I hope you get gobbled up by Google and you make a fortune because that's the end goal, right? Of every startup, get gobbled up.
Apparently it is. Yeah.
Anyway,
but building lots of hardware, hopefully that's, cool. So like to be completely frank about it, like, I enjoyed the stuff I'd done in the past, like product marketing stuff I did a little bit at Hologram and a little bit at Supply Frame. But like one of the things that I struggled with was the fact that like, you know, you and I would talk every week and I'd be like, I haven't built electronics in like 6 months, you know? And it's like, ugh. And it's just, you know, I get away from it and it's, one, we don't have anything to talk about then. And two, it's like, I don't like it. I'm not as engaged when it's like just writing emails all day or writing, you know, marketing campaigns. So yeah, I'm back on that tech. I mean, obviously I've been on that technical track for the past 3 years doing consulting, but I was not going to hop away from consulting unless I was doing hardware design. And
Right. So you wouldn't have gone to just a marketing role at some startup.
That's right.
Even if they offered you a, you know, 30% in the company.
Gobs of money. Oh yeah. I don't know. Like if you don't like your job in the,
oh, no, of course. If you don't like it. Yep. Yeah. Why do it? Yep. Totally agree.
Right. Well, I think we're very lucky in that way, right? That
That option. Yeah, exactly. Because we've been in the industry a while and we can, people know.
Because we are 40 plus and or near to it.
but more to the point, people know who we are. So, you know, that's more important than the, people knowing who you are is more important than, it can be more important than what you've done and what you know. If people know you.
That's right.
Then, you know, opportunities come. So
one of the former engineer blogs writers, there's a long throwback for people. for new listeners, a blog is what people used to write technical articles on. and so Sam Feller is one of the guys who used to write on that. He actually just put out a post about a CRM, so a customer relationship management software that he was using, where he would just do that to keep in touch with people. And he said he got a bunch of like consulting work like that. And just kind of like, he said he would reach out on people's half birthdays instead of on their birthdays.
Okay.
And that like allowed him to keep in touch with people and that allowed him to get jobs. And I don't know, just like people knew him because he kept in touch with them. So that kind of thing is important.
Right. Yeah. I'm not really a people person. Whereas you are, you're a contact collector.
That's a little cynical.
It's a little cynical, but
maybe true in the end. But I'd like to think I enjoy talking to people.
Yeah,
how about that?
Of course. Yeah, but you're much your order of magnitude.
You're more social than you think. You just don't need to talk to people because, I mean, honestly, you do though, right? I mean, that is another option. And that's what we talked to Florin about last week from Voltlog. You know, Florin got consulting work because he was doing technical videos.
Yeah.
And like people found him through the internet. It's basically, it's a pull instead of a push, right?
Yep.
So Sam is writing about pushing out emails to people and keeping in touch like that.
Yep.
And Florin is talking, and Florin and you as an example as well, basically, you know, you guys push out these videos and instead that pulls people to you. So I think that's another way to do it.
Mm. Well, that's the difference between, which is still current. It's all about your contact list. You know, it's all about your contact list. Like I get emails from companies all the time. Oh, can we buy your contact list? It's like, no,
really?
I'm not harvesting every, you know, like everyone who buys on my store, I'm not harvesting their email
once.
And, you know, and I do actually have a newsletter where people can sign up and technically, I've got a list of like 5,000 people or something like that.
That's right.
But I'd never
you get an
like
email when,
sell it.
When things are on sale.
You know? Yeah. It's like, whereas that is the approach that a lot of people in the industry take, is that it's all about the quantity of names and addresses that you have. And that sort of stuff, as opposed to like putting out content and then having new people actually find you that way, making something useful.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, making content or, you know, a product or something like that where people can, you know, hear about you and find you. No, you just actually collect, you just harvest, you know, contacts. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that is kind of the view of the internet of like, there's always more people out there. And I usually don't ascribe that to like the electronics world of the internet. You know, the electronics people on the internet, there's probably millions of people that are interested in electronics at various levels. But like, if you're trying to find like the most engaged people in test equipment, it's probably there's probably a fixed number at any given time in history. And so if you try and gather all of the people on the EV blog forum and spam them with an email.
That
crowd might get a little upset.
They'd get a bit miffed. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I've not like every time even though people deliberately signed up for my email list, right? And I tell them when they sign up, it's like, you're signing up because I will send you very occasionally, like when I release a new product or I have a sale or something like that. Right?
That's right.
This is what you're signing up for, right? And they have to go to the webpage, put in there, hit the button, everything. And then I get, you know, every time I send out a mass email to like 5,000 people, I can actually see, you know, in the data, you can see how many people unsubscribe and, you know, they hit the unsubscribe button. It's like, no, I don't want this shit anymore. This is, you know, and you get, you know, reasons. I didn't sign up for this. It's like, yeah, you did. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, right. You know. And it's like, and it's the same for signing up for when you subscribe to a channel, right? You subscribe to a YouTube channel, you subscribe to a podcast like this. It's like, you change over the years, right? You signed up for that content back then, and the content hasn't changed, but you've changed, which isn't a bad thing, you know. Like, it's just, you know, people's needs and things change over the years, and they're interests change and whatnot, and what they signed up for a long time ago is no longer relevant.
Yeah, totally.
Mm. Have we YouTubed enough for today? Have we content platformed enough for today?
Sure. Yeah, I guess so.
Probably.
Are we over the limit? We're over the limit.
Yeah, we are over the limit. We're a minute over, dude.
I want to talk more about IoT. Not about my IoT, actually, but Amazon. Amazon just launched something interesting. A private 5G network. So this is an Amazon. So basically, Amazon has their big conference right now, reInvent. I think it's over tomorrow. So it'll be over by the time people are listening to this. You can go watch the old stuff. But
what, they're physically installing poles? What's going on? How are they
doing? Basically, they will have, they'll have like transceivers on site. Like, so say you had a factory.
Yep.
They'll have like, what do they call them? Like Pico stations?
Yep.
Yeah.
So they'll pay to put them on your building or something? Is that the...
Well, it'll be private to your staff though, right? So basically it's like, and you can already do this. Like, so the fab that I used to work at Samsung, they had a telephone system at least. Not that they're talking about telephone system here, but they had a telephone system that was bespoke to a fab and used low frequency audio signaling to reach all the different phones in the fab, that sort of thing. And so now this is kind of the same thing. It's like high speed, high bandwidth capabilities to maybe inside your warehouse or, you know.
Right.
So okay. maybe like the DigiKeys or the Mausers of the world, they want to know where their carts are and they want
right.
to have
so
like
okay. So they're targeting businesses,
tracking.
Right. They're not they're targeting yeah, factories yeah. and businesses. They aren't targeting Joe Average on the street to.
That's right. Yeah. Right. I mean, you, okay. They're not even a carrier. They don't even guarantee that they would hook you into.
Right.
Basically, they're just hooking you into a local network at that point. They're not hooking you into a carrier and into the broader like VoIP ecosystem or data ecosystem. As far as I understand it, I think this would be like you'd be using like 5G frequencies so you could buy an off the shelf 5G modem, you know, so like a lot of like Quicktel and Simcom and a lot of them offer 5G modems now, which is
well,
cool.
Well, this was going to be my question. Have they developed their own hardware or are they just using off the shelf hardware and it's just a software infrastructure? It's off the shelf, is it?
That's right.
Okay,
yep,
right.
Yeah, and it says it uses shared spectrum like CBRS, right? So CBRS is Citizens Broadband Radio Service. So basically, they're within a certain band.
I didn't know there was citizen band stuff on in the 5G space.
Yeah, 5G kind of spans a lot of stuff. So like if you look at... A lot of what 5G is like, there's like additional spectrum in some of the 4G frequency ranges. And then, you know, so 5G also has millimeter waves. And then that's up in the multi gigahertz type of ranges.
Yep.
And that's when
it's in the 30 gig or things, something. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You start to see like transceivers on multiple poles in a city, right? So that's what they start talking about. So 5G is very, it's not nebulous. It's very dispersed over different technology types, and it's kind of all falls under this 5G umbrella.
Right.
That's why for a long time we said on this show 5G doesn't exist. But when a lot of the marketing started, it was basically just like higher bandwidth 4G frequencies. And what's eventually going to happen in theory is that it will have, you know, you'll have millimeter wave transceivers kind of spread throughout a city, for example, and you'll have really short distance but really high bandwidth. And that's kind of the idea there. So,
okay. Well, this is interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting that, I mean, really this is a new space for Amazon at least. And they had a bunch of different announcements come out at reInvent. This is one of the most interesting ones that I saw.
Right.
So yeah, it's interesting to see this kind of thing. Like I said, I mean, it's possible for people. So like they had you could set up a LTE frequency network other places, right? So like when I went to, what's it called? Not Tor Camp. I went to Chaos Communication Camp. They actually had a private network, private cellular network on site. Where they had, you know, they would hand you a SIM. It wouldn't talk to any other networks out there. But it operated in the same way. And they had like SDRs that were doing the same kind of thing. So it's not like that's not possible now. It's then like, okay, what frequency range are you in?
Yep.
You know, make sure you're not stomping on some real carriers' frequencies, and then what are you then doing with that data when you collect it locally?
So is this a new way to maybe automate factories? You would embed 5G. See, the thing that immediately pops to my mind is the Amazon Kindle, right? Because it has a 5G, like, well, it's got a SIM card 3G. In it. Well, you can buy a SIM card version, right?
Yeah, a lot of those are going to stop working soon. A lot of them are 3G, actually.
The older ones.
It's 3G, and a lot of 3G shutting down.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Make sure your Wi-Fi password's up to date.
Make sure your Wi-Fi works. Yeah. So they could presumably, like as they come off, they are already doing this. As they come off the production line, they can actually program these things, and they set them up. As they come up, you know, when you order one, you can set up, and they can program that. And they can target that particular serial number device wirelessly and program it and pre-set it up for your actual account, for your Amazon account, which is fairly cool. And they could do that using these little 5G transmittery things if it's got a 5G receiver in it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that would be the target of this specific thing Amazon right now.
No, it's not. But that's what pops into my mind, which is why I mentioned factory automation and stuff like that. You could, you know, you could potentially build into your factory equipment these little 5G.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
You know, transceiver things. But then again, like there's so many existing solutions for that, you know, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people that are like low number of devices and stuff like that, as long as you have a tower nearby, it's going to make more sense. Even though you're paying a carrier, then it's like it's going to make more sense from an infrastructure perspective to use a carrier and rely on the towers and that sort of thing. So,
all right. But if you, you can control it yourself, then, you know, that's going to be better, I guess, because then if the tower goes down, you know, or something happens, I don't know.
I guess. I don't...
Then your factory keeps running, I guess. But
I guess so.
I don't know.
I mean, factory stuff is very, very difficult.
Yeah. Anyway, fascinating.
If you've got in-place machines, I'd say good old copper.
Yeah, copper, yeah. Yeah. With people the signals like answer, flowing inside the wires.
That's right. You know, that's right. Yeah, nice talk. Nice throwback.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That's enough from us. I'm sure we'll have lots of IoT things to torture Dave with in the future.
Oh, great. Great. Yep. Thank you.
Talk to you then.
Catch you next time.